The Ear, Evangelical and Reformed, Christian Podcast. Welcome to The Ear, the Evangelical and Reformed, a Christian podcast that urges you to think deeper and draws you closer to God through faith. Through powerful sermons, teaching segments, and discussions, The Ear hopes to give you a different perspective on secular topics from a Christian worldview. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Please welcome your host, Brandon Queen.
There we go. Well, good afternoon, podcast world, and welcome to the fifth week of, you got it. What's this thing called again? I forget. No, I'm just playing. It's the way forward. We are on week five, and week five is entitled, what is week five entitled?
Men need camaraderie. So we've talked about captivation. We've talked about clarity. We are in the midst of trying to think about those traits that you see in men that have a dynamic spiritual life. And so giving men a kind of not a lifelong goal, but kind of a shorter term horizon. What should you aspire to? What's the kind of man that, you know, over the next year, two, 3 years, you could grow into? That's what we're describing. So this third trait is that men need camaraderie. And that's what we'll be thinking about tonight.
Yeah. Joe, are you aware that we are literally at the halfway mark with this series? Week five? We got five more episodes left.
I know. And you know what? I'm like using this to measure like quarantined time. So it's like, whoa, like this has been going on for a while.
Yeah. Cause I think when we first started, it was the first week of quarantine. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Cause I remember telling you I wanted to do a couple of these in person, but that never happened.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Distant memories.
Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and dive on into this week's questions. So my first question for you, Joe, is what's the difference between spiritual friendship and other forms of friendship?
Yeah. So again, thinking here about camaraderie, spiritual friendship, you know, friendship's a category that people used to think more about. So you can go all the way back to old like Greek and Roman thinkers, guys like Aristotle, Cicero. They used to write books on friendship and they would describe different types. Now, I think when most Americans think of friendship, they think of like one thing, one category. But what we need to do is break it down. So I'll give you some different categories of friendship and we'll try to distinguish spiritual from the other types. So one would be friendships based on utility or usefulness. So here, think of your work colleagues. You know, you see them every day, you know, you talk to each other, but truth be told, if somebody transferred their job, you probably never speak to them again in many cases, right? So you've got those kinds of friends. You've got friendships based on enjoyment. So a classic example of this is golf friends. You know, every weekend you go, you play golf together, play tennis together, go play basketball together, whatever. But it's that activity that keeps you together. And if somebody got hurt and stopped showing up, you don't really hear about them anymore. So that's another type. You know, a third type would be just friendships of kind of memory or affection. So high school buddies, you get together, you have lots of fun, you reminisce, but if you're not reminiscing, there's really nothing else to talk about, you know? So, you know, there's all of these types, but what these older thinkers would also describe is friendship based on the good life. And what they meant by that was when people have a shared destination, then what they're able to do is help each other grow toward whatever that standard of excellence is. And so with spiritual friendship, we're kind of taking that idea and we're bringing it into the house of discipleship. So these are friendships that are deliberately and intentionally focused on helping one another grow into the likeness of Jesus. And, you know, probably the best picture, if you're thinking of just like a everyday picture, is if you think of athletes, you cannot find a sport, an Olympic sport, where athletes train alone. Even if you're a sprinter, you know, doing your own race, you go find some of the other sprinters that run the same race and you train with them. And athletes know that by doing that, they actually bring out the best of one another. And so again, that's the kind of ideas, what you get in Pilgrim's Progress, people on a shared journey that can help each other through the difficulties, over the mountains, and get to the ultimate destination, which is into the presence of God together. That's what we're after.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like with work, I got people that are in my corner pushing me forward and trying to get me trained to where I can do my job effectively. So it's, and it's funny because I was going to ask you to kind of throw in the athletic side to this whole Bible study, and you just did. So I didn't have to ask. Thanks for reading my mind. However, now when you say spiritual friendships versus other forms of friendship, now you kind of broke it down pretty fairly well. But let's go back to the spiritual friendship. And I want to add, if we are men of God, then we have to do several things, like hold each other accountable. We have to disciple, or our favorite word is persevere with that person, no matter what they're going through. So it's our job to be that strength for our brother in Christ. For example, my roommate, both of us are Christian. He struggle, I struggle. We try to help each other as best as we can. Sometimes we succeed, sometimes we don't. But that's the joy of having a spiritual brother in Christ.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that's it. You're in the game together, right? I mean, we're all thrown into it. But these are relationships that have to be intentionally pursued, because they'll hit a ceiling on their own unless we find ways of deepening and enriching them, especially as men.
Yeah. Now, what is the biblical background for spiritual friendship?
Go ahead.
I was going to ask the second part of that question, but I'll wait. So what is the biblical background of spiritual friendship?
Yeah. So I'll throw out a few verses at you. So first, from the Proverbs, Proverbs 13, verse 20 says, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." Now, this is something you can find a lot of material in psychology right now that affirms the same point. This idea that so much of who we become is at an unconscious level, that the people we're around are contagious. They rub off on us. And so, what the proverb says right here is that you want to be a wise man, and it's not just wisdom. You want to be a courageous man. You want to be a student of the Bible. You want to be a man of prayer. One of the best things we can do is not sit down and think, how do I do this on my own? A better plan is actually to surround yourself with guys that have the characteristic you want, and it'll rub off on you. It's contagious. So, there's one principle we see in the Proverbs. Throw out a couple other verses at you. So here's Proverbs 18:1. It says, "A man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all wise judgment." Here we're hitting against the deceitfulness of the human heart. One of the problems with sin is guys who are falling into dangerous patterns, they often don't see it. Hebrews talks about beware of the deceitfulness, the hardening of your own heart. And if we're just going to trust our instincts are going to fail us. And so the Proverbs here is describing a man who's isolating himself because he doesn't want anybody else's point of view. He doesn't want to be caught, right? And, guys do this all the time, especially with when you see breakdown of a marriage. They begin to separate themselves from the voices of accountability so they can justify their behavior. And the best thing we can do to stop that is early on, proactively, have other men in our life who will see it when we don't see it, point it out to us, and, hit us over the head before we do something that really hurts us and somebody else. I'll throw one more. So this is probably, we could go elsewhere. Jesus has some great things to say about spiritual friendship in John 15, but a passage guys need to know about, because this is as practical as it gets. This is Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9 to 12. And I'll read it to you. There's three really big ideas that are so critical, that are highlighted right here. So it says, "Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And a threefold cord is not easily broken." So, guys, why should you have these close relationships with other men willing to hold you accountable, support you? Three reasons right here. One, if you're alone and fall down, you got no one to pick you up. And part of being a Christian, it is stumbling on our own feet, right? Stumbling on the traps that are set. And we all need somebody who can lift us up when we're on the ground and can't lift ourselves. Talks about if you try to keep yourself warm, if you try to keep the pace of a spiritual life, if you try to keep yourself motivated for prayer or for even just showing up at church or for committing to small group, eventually that motivation is going to wane. You put yourself around other people, they'll help you stay warm. And then the third thing is, look, it says, one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. You know, we've already talked in prior weeks about the devil prowling like a roaring lion. You know, let's not face that lion on our own if we don't have to. If we do it together, we can withstand temptation that left to ourselves, we might fall prey to. So there you go. There's some biblical context to this idea, the importance of setting ourselves in close relationships with other men.
Absolutely. All right, now let me ask the second part of that question. So where do we see this idea in the Bible? And I think you just gave us that. So let me revamp that question and say, how does a man look for the answers that you just gave us in the Bible without obviously using the verses you just gave us?
Yeah. You know, I think men, let's just begin by saying we need this. This is vital. We've laid out some groundwork for it. It's implicit in a lot of the teaching of the New Testament. When you look at the kinds of relationships that the one anothering, we'd love to see that in all of our relationships with brothers and sisters in Christ. But truth be told, a lot of that stuff, when you talk about confessing your sin to one another, really right. Admonishing one another, you can't just do that without a fairly deep relationship. And so we're moving beyond a kind of casual to a realm where you really feel you can trust yourself to others, and you're willing to listen to their point of view, even if it hurts. So that's where we're trying to drive the conversation.
Have to write that point down. All right, so How is the spiritual friendship different from being a part of a small group, you know, Bible study or one-to-one discipleship relationship? How does all that work?
Yeah, you know, if you look at what most churches are trying to structure within their congregation, you know, you've always got the big, large group, which you always need to have. But, you know, beyond that, there are house groups or some sort of community group. And then, you know, you've got one-to-one discipleship relationships. We've got one more mature person walking with a less mature. What's different about this is it's really among kind of equals. It's not so much a relationship, an asymmetrical relationship where one person's kind of in a position of being the more of the discipler. The other one is the more receptive. It's more like, again, a bunch of guys who are just pursuing the same objective. And where that's important is, I think often, take community groups, for example, they try to accomplish more than they're able to. So you can find endless churches that are trying to get people to be vulnerable. They're trying to get them to be, you know, confess their struggles. But, you know, if you've got 8 to 10 people that you really don't know that well, male, female, all different stages, often those aren't settings that guys are really able to unload on. And so, so again, this is what's different is we're talking about guys who, you know, they might, you know, that they're really on a shared road, and they're trying to seek out a degree of trust where they can have that vulnerability, where they can talk about their struggles, talk about their temptations. That's a little bit different than especially a small group, but again, often even that mentor relationship where, because the mentor may not open himself up, the person being discipled often closes themselves somewhat too. So again, it's a little bit different from that as well.
Almost like counseling, if you do one-on-one,
yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, except for it's friendship, except we're talking about, again, the picture of pilgrims on a road to a you know, on a journey together. So, you know, you go to a counselor and it's like, they're the authority and you're sitting and you're kind of trying to get their advice. This is more like, hey guys, let's show up, you know, every week, but we're not just going to talk about, you know, what's going on in college football. We're not even just going to talk about, say, a Bible study. I'm going to ask you a hard question, like, where have you been tempted this last week? And you're going to give me an honest answer, like a kind of relationship that most guys can hardly imagine.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm actually going to do is I'm going to actually request that the men that are listening to this Bible study after they finish with this one, or even while, since we're quarantined, is get a copy of Pilgrim's Progress. And I'm going to dig it out of my shelf before this is over with to show you what it looks like, because that's a very, like, it's a very good book. And I think it parallels very well with your book, Joe. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to get there. I mean, it's a recommendation at the end. But here's a from church history, here's an example of, so John Wesley. Yeah. John Wesley was brilliant when it came to organizing discipleship. And he would organize the early Methodists into various groups. But at the smallest level, he had what were called bands. And it'd be 4 to 6 people. They'd be either male or female. And every week they would meet and they would answer 5 questions. Now, I'm going to forget one of these, I always do, but the first question is they would answer, like, where have you been tempted in the last week? The second question is, how has God delivered you from your temptation? The third question was, is there anything in your life you're not sure if you know it's a sin or not? So, in our day and age, that would be like, hey, I'm watching this show on Netflix. I don't know if I should be watching it or not. What do you guys think? But I always forget the fourth question, but the fifth one's the kicker. The fifth one is just, man, it makes you, like, think, I could never do this. But they would all ask each other every week, is there anything you desire to keep secret? Now just think about that. I mean, most guys don't have anybody ever ask them that question, even in a church setting. Is there anything you want to keep secret right now? And that's a scary question, because a lot of us, you know, all of us at various times are keeping things secret. It causes all kinds of destructive, you know, patterns in our life. And so to actually be with a group of men that you trust enough that you would answer that question honestly, think about how powerful that could be for men.
You're so right, because in today's age, people can be so judgmental that nobody wants to open up and say, hey, I'm hiding this. Like, for example, one of my weaknesses is Oreos. I've been trying to stop eating them, but it's a weakness, all right? So if I'm on a diet, per se, and you ask me next week, what am I keeping as a secret? Eating Oreos.
Right.
You know, I mean, even though that's simple, but okay. So one of my ex-roommates that just recently moved out, we could share deep stuff with each other and know that it's not going to get out there, and not that we're going to judge each other, but we're going to try to help each other through it. And I so strongly urge men to take the John Wesley model and be a small group and ask these 5 questions, because I think it's an awesome question and it opens up for discussion and it also opens up for healing. Right. In my personal opinion, just by hearing that question, okay, I'm hiding this. Okay, now how can I heal from this? And I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and let's be honest. I mean, you know, 75 to 80% of Christian men, and this includes, you know, church leaders, are struggling with pornography. And so, you know, there is, you know, that is, it may be prevalent, but it is still a, you know, disgusting problem that we got to deal with as guys. You know, we can't just countenance it and think it's okay because everybody's doing it. It's something that we've got to find relationships where we can be honest about struggles so guys can get out of that pit, you know, because it's destructive to all kinds of areas of our life. And so, you know, that's where we're in a real battle, like we talked about before. It's a real battle we're engaged in. We need people who we can be honest with, who, like you said, they're not going to just kick us out. But they're also not just going to say, hey, look, that's okay, I struggle too. They're going to say, hey, look, we got to help each other because we want to move past this, right? We want to grow more like Jesus. And so that's what we're about. That's the kind of intentional relationship we're after.
Yeah, I mean, look, the internet can be great in so many ways, but dangerous and sinful in so many ways. It's not even funny. All right. Now, what are the barriers that keep men from investing in spiritual friendships? Obviously, keeping secrets.
Yeah, I think friendship is something that we just think comes natural, because we, you know, we have friends, and that's why, you know, we started talking about different types of friendship. You know, a lot of guys, you know, you got the people that you see at work, you know, you got some guys that maybe you'll watch a game with now and again. And so you've got people in your life, but the depth of those relationships can be very shallow. And so you can have an extrovert who's around people all the time, but is lonely and has, like, you know, depression and a bunch of things, corrosive stuff that nobody even sees. This is why, you know, the guy that, you know, goes out and attempts or commits suicide, nobody saw it coming, right? Because no one, even though they were around, they didn't know him. And he couldn't open up his struggles to anybody. And so, you know, there's that fact that we live in an age that hasn't really been told what a meaningful relationship is. We haven't been taught how to pursue these things. It's expected that this is just kind of like, you know, walking. It just happens on your own, and it's not. You know, you can't just text each other now and again and end up with the kind of relationship that allows this kind of transparency, something you have to make time for. And even as churches, I mean, we tell people to, you know, read your Bible. We tell people to pray. We tell people to go to church. You don't often hear people really being told, look, you need this kind of relationship, and your spouse isn't enough. Yes, you want your spouse to be this kind of relationship, but you can't have one load-bearing wall in your house. You need multiple load-bearing walls.
Right. Now, I don't know if you saw the email today from the EPC about Dean Weaver.
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, you know who Dean Weaver is, right?
I don't.
Okay, you got to get involved with some General Assemblies, man.
Okay.
Well, Dean Weaver became a good friend of mine over the past 2 years. One of the strong pillars of men that I lean on for spiritual growth and I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Correction if needed, things. But Dean just got selected as the person that's going to succeed Jeff Jeremiah as the stated clerk for the EPC. And he and I were on the phone today, and he's probably not, I don't know if he's going to be mad if I share this or not, but he and I were on the phone today, and he was talking about getting the position. Now, if anybody knows Dean, he's very humble, not one to really seek positions of power like that or of status like that. He is more of a back burner preacher. Give me a church, I'll preach the gospel. I'll try to find ways to grow the church, and that's it. That's all I want to do. Well, he originally said no to the position. And then a couple months later, he said his wife walked up to him and said, hey, I've been praying about this, and God spoke to me and told me, you need to do this. All right. Now, it's not camaraderie it is camaraderie for a man and a wife or a husband and a wife to come together and agree on things and correct each other on things. But I think it's powerful for two men or two women, if you were to do the same thing. You know, like, Joe, if I'm struggling with something, I need to be able to trust you. When I call you and say, hey, Joe, look, I'm having this issue with this. Can you be in prayer with me? And you're going to say, yeah, I'll be in prayer with you, but you need to find a way to stop doing that, or you need to think about doing it this way. Men don't like that. Think about it. Mm-hmm. We're alpha dogs. We want to be in control, and nobody can tell us nothing. And because we're alpha, if you will, that is a spiritual barrier that can come in between myself and a person that's really looking out for my spirituality and looking out for the saving of my soul, if you will.
Yeah.
If that comes across as understandable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, yeah, that pride, that's a huge thing. Guys do not want to be thought to be weak, shown to be weak, and, you know, asking for help, even if it's like asking, you know, our wife for like directions, you know, in the middle of a city, or, you know, like, we won't even do that, much less actually go, you know, go with a major situation to another man and ask for any help. So yeah, that pride, but, you know, pride comes before the fall. So we got to be really careful to let that pride not have its way in our heart.
Yeah. I look at it as this, men don't read instruction manuals. Okay. And sometimes, look, I'm guilty of it too. I could pick up technology and figure out how to work it without reading the manual. I go back and read the manual like 2 or 3 days later just to do it. But we don't read instruction manuals. And we always beat our chest and say, "Ha, I got this. I don't need that. I can build this without the instruction manual." And then we hit rock bottom and we can't figure out how to make it work. And I think God, number one, gives us his word as his instruction manual. But if you're married, he gives us wives. That's part of the instruction manual. He gives us kids. That's part of the instruction manual. But most importantly, he gives us relationships. Like, you know, you and I, we haven't talked for about 8 years until you released this book. Obviously I want to keep this relationship going from here on out, but we haven't been talking for 8 years.
Right.
All right. And there could have been a part of my life where I needed Joe. Now, look, God does things for a reason. God brings people together and tears them apart at certain times in our lives. But I mean, let's face it. You know, if we're going to consider ourselves spiritual brothers in faith that hold each other accountable, it can't be, I'll get to you in 6 months and we'll talk about your problems. It almost has to be to where, Joe, you annoy the living mess out of me, but you're calling me and texting me every single day to make sure that I'm not falling back into the temptations that I'm trying to, you know, pray myself out of, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and you know, that's something that in marriage, you discover that point where, you get beyond that honeymoon phase and you see the person. But, you know, that's where the real relationship can take off and the real benefit of the relationship can come in, that it's not just about, like, you know, the sort of shallow pleasure, but the really deep commitment and transformative commitment to one another. And, you know, their friendship can be similar. Like you said, you got to be close enough to guys that, you know what their deodorant smells like. It's like, you know the good, you know the bad. But it doesn't put you off because, again, you're committed to seeing each other transformed.
That's funny. You know what the deodorant smells like. I don't want to get to a man that close. look, I can love you from a distance, and social distancing right now is the way to go.
That's right.
All right. So in the book, you mentioned three traits of spiritual friendship, right intention, shared thermostat, and a covenant agreement. Now, covenant agreement like sticks out to me the most, but what do you mean by covenant agreement?
Yeah. So again, I want guys to be able to see the nuts and bolts of everything in this book, because when you leave things abstract, undefined, it's just unhelpful. So spiritual friendship, these three traits, you need to have a sense of intention, but right intention, right? Because you're both trying to aspire toward becoming like Jesus, growing into a more holy, godly man. You need to both have a shared thermostat, a sense of like, look, we really want this. You know, I mean, if you're not really both kind of excited about your walk with Jesus, it's not really going to be the kind of relationship that you need. But this third one, covenant agreement, it's where I think you draw a line in the sand. These relationships typically will not happen on their own. And so covenant agreement is something I've pulled from a book by Stephen Mansfield and How to Build Your Band of Brothers. And he talks about, look, you don't have to have this, but often it's helpful if you actually just explicitly say that there's what he calls a free fire zone. So anything that needs to be said will be said in order to make us into better men. And so you actually give somebody permission to say, look, I want you to be honest with me. If you see something in me that I need to be confronted about, love me enough not to keep it a secret. Likewise, though, I want you to let me have that same kind of ability to do the same with you. And often it's helpful to do that explicitly because guys don't feel comfortable. You know, you can preach and preach and preach that we should admonish one another, encourage one another, but, you know, we just fall back into social norms. We do not live in a time and in a place where people are actually willing to, when needed, with discretion, speak the truth. Yes, with love, but speak the truth.
Yeah.
And so that's what, just look, we're in this. We're gonna make it formal. So you tell me, I'll tell you. That's what I mean by covenant agreement.
Yeah. And I look at my role as an elder. You know, it's my job as a ruling elder of a congregation, of course, in the Presbyterian realm, to love a person enough to point out when they're doing something wrong. And we call that church discipline, if you will. You know, I think of the guys with the white powdered wigs that approach someone and say, hey, you did this. Now you must be dealt with. You know, it's not that kind of relationship. It's more of, I'm going to give you a prime example. My sergeant, great guy. Love the guy. He's awesome. Good friend of mine, both on the clock and off the clock. But he has been 100% hard on me. And sometimes I'm like, okay, dude, you could chill out with the hardness, you know? But what I'm starting to, I've been realizing this, that he has been grooming me or attempting to groom me into the person that I need to be beneficial to the job and to the agency. And because he loves me enough to tell me when I'm wrong and when to correct it, he doesn't care about my feelings. He cares about the fact that I need to do this job right so that I can succeed and make myself look good, make the agency look good, and also let the victim see what kind of detective we all can be. You know, so same thing with my pastor. If I make a mistake on something, he loves me enough to tell me, hey, dude, look, you need to fix this. All right, Pastor Bill, I'll fix it, you know. But then I have some friends that are afraid to tell me when I'm doing something wrong or when I said something that could be harsh or whatnot. And then I have those friends that'll say something harsh and not care about the feelings of the other person. Right. And I'm not saying men should be all mushy and gooey and you know, wear their feelings on their sleeve. But when it comes to the matters of the heart or matters of spirituality and our relationship with God, we kind of need to wear our vulnerability on our sleeve because it needs to be out in the open. If it's not out in the open, we can't deal with that problem. All right. We can't deal with that sin, if you will. It's always going to be hidden underneath the cuff of our sleeve or underneath the watch band. You know, I'm using analogies here, but yeah, we definitely have to be open to sharing everything there is about our sinful lives, if you will, as brothers in Christ.
And you don't need tons of these kinds of friends, but you need a few of them. You need hopefully, again, your spouse is one. I hope your spouse is a spiritual friend, you know, if you're married. But then, you know, besides that, guys should have, you know, a couple of other guys like this. And I think it's so important that, you know, in this book, there's five traits I'm using to describe guys who really have dynamic walks. This is one of five. So that's how important I think it is that men are willing to have this kind of quality relationship in their life.
Now, what are some risks and dangers of spiritual friendships?
Yeah, you know, I think we have to remember as Christians that we ultimately are called not just to befriend the people we like, right? I mean, not just to surround ourselves with the people we enjoy. And with any kind of friendship, there's the danger of being closed off. And so guys just need to remember, okay, this is a relationship. It's not the only relationship that we're called to. And so, you know, you're going to have people who you are called to love that are never going to be able to reach this level of friendship because, truth be told, they're not trustworthy or they lack discretion or whatever else. They're just kind of, you know, foolish. But we're still called to love them as a fellow brother or sister in Christ. And so, you know, guys need to think about circles of relationships and the way in which you treat different types of people differently. But yeah, the danger is that this becomes kind of the back door into just being able to focus on the people you enjoy being around and forget about the people who are awkward and difficult that God has also called us to befriend and love.
Sometimes I'm like, why are you calling me to befriend this person? I don't even like this person, you know?
Yeah.
I got a few of those, I must admit. However, I try to be cordial with them and I try to, you know, respect them in a manner that glorifies God. And I fail at it almost every single day.
Right.
But, you know, that person that, you know, like I have a he's a kid that I'm trying to groom into the right person. And I've gotten accustomed to God using me in such a way that God's will is done and I'm satisfied with whatever comes out of the relationship. You know, to where I'll help someone through something. Of course, God's using me as the vessel. And this person gets through that struggle and they start to flourish. And then he sent me this person that doesn't listen, doesn't like direction, correction, or criticism, constructive criticism, and tends to buck everything that's being thrown at them. But this person claims to be a Christian and claims to love God. And it's like, okay, you're claiming all of these things. I'm trying to be that spiritual brother for you and help you through these things. But what you're saying over here and what really needs to happen isn't lining up. So what am I supposed to believe? Are you really a Christian? Or are you just like doing the sinful things, ticking people off, thinking you can do what you want? Or are you really seeking the things of God? And if you're seeking the things of God, will it line up to where God is in the forefront and where God is glorified? And I've been praying for patience, and I made a mistake by doing that because this kid is literally testing my patience. And for me, I guess a danger of spiritual friendship would be sometimes I'm ready to just throw in a towel and say, you know what, forget it. You do you and I will do me.
Right.
But then that's the selfish side of me coming out and not obeying God's command to go, therefore, and teach or help someone through something. You know, I think every time I want to throw in a towel, I am in complete violation of Matthew 28 and 29, you know, completely just in violation of it. And it's like, I can't do that. I want to strangle this person. He needs to get it. But, you know, again, we can't be judgmental because if this person relies on us to keep their deepest secrets, or not keep them, but help them get through their deepest secrets, then we have to, what men claim they like to do is persevere and not throw in that towel. You know, so dangers with spiritual friendships can always be at the forefront of our minds, but at the same time, we need to not worry about that and let God handle that, because obviously he's the one calling you to it. What's that old saying? He'll lead you through it. So we have to trust God with everything. Basically, we have to trust God with our lives.
Every relationship's dangerous. That's the humorous thing about this statement, you know, settling down. You talk about when you get married, you settle down. You don't settle down. I mean, you begin a whole adventure. Like, there's nothing more dangerous than, like, opening yourself up to somebody that you think you know, but, you know. So that's why relationships are so transformative. I mean, they're disruptive. You know, you see the shadow you didn't even know existed.
Right.
But that's, if you want to grow, you need that kind of knowledge that only comes through another person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, spiritual friendship is a concept that Keller and Timothy Keller used in his book on marriage. All right. So what is the relevance of spiritual friendship for thinking about the kind of relationship husband should pursue with their wives? Now, that's a very important question. What is the relevance of that spiritual friendship?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, you have two types of guys. You have one set of guys that leans exclusively on his wife for spiritual friendship. And so, you know, they've got a great degree of intimacy where they can talk and share. And that's supposed to be enough when it's not. And they have another guy who, you know, loves to talk to his guy friends and kind of close himself off to his spouse. And the truth is we need spiritual friends. We need if we're married, we need our spouse, and we also need some guys because they're different, those two relationships. But think about marriage, you know, we ought to hope and pray that our deepest spiritual friendship is with our spouse. And I'll read a quote from Tim Keller in his book on marriage. He says, "What then is marriage for? It is for helping each other to become our future glory selves, the new creations that God will eventually make us. The common horizon husband and wife look toward is the throne and the holy, spotless, and blameless nature we will have." And so what that does is it puts marriage in this context of a pilgrimage, a journey together, where you're both headed to a place, and you've been brought together for a time in order to help each other grow into the people God has called you to be. In essence, that's what spiritual friendship is. And that's what marriage is for. And so, you know, this fits very well as guys are thinking about, okay, how do I need to grow and develop my relationship with my wife? Well, again, you need for both of you to see that, hey, ultimately we're going to stand in the presence of Jesus. And so this is not just about you and I getting along, raising kids, having a good time, going on date nights. All of that might be good and have its place, but ultimately we've got to see all of this is for something bigger. We want to be the bride of Christ. And so that's what we've been called together for.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And look, you know, you're so right. Men need camaraderie, and it's not just that kind of friendship where you hang out with your guys on the weekends and drink a beer or right. barbecue or watch a football game or a basketball game. It's something deeper where when you enter a friendship, a spiritual friendship, you are entering, and I love it, a covenant agreement to hold one another accountable and keep one another on the same path that you are on, like on that strong Christian Christ-like path. And it's a bond that interlocks that nobody can break, okay? And this is a weak bond. Anybody can break that. But if you cling on to something and you really dig in and you dig your heels in and you work with that person and that person works with you and you hold each other accountable, then, you know, it's kind of like Christ and the bride of the church, you know, and that's why marriage is such a, and I'm not married. I wish I was. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I do. I don't know. I can't make up my mind. But but marriage is, when you look at marriage in the Bible, it's literally that chain link fence, if you will, that joins a husband and a wife as one, all right, as a husband and a bride. But when they're together, they're supposed to have that intimate, you know, covenant agreement to hold each other accountable and this, that, and the other. But think about it. Let's say I was married, Joe, and then you and your wife, you know, because I'm young, took me and my wife under your wing, and then and the four of us started building a strong relationship. Now our marriage is stronger. And then we pick a younger couple and do the same thing with. And it just keeps going forward and forward and forward. And before you know it, you have another church outside of the church within the church. All right. So that friendship doesn't just start with, oh, let's go have a beer or hang out together. It starts with the foundation, which is Christ. Mm. And that camaraderie needs to start with Christ, no matter what. That's my opinion.
And that's what ultimately this is about. I mean, you know, when you draw near to a Christian, ultimately, you know, if they have Christ in them, then the very deepest, the very best thing about them is what you come to know about Jesus. They, in a sense, become a way for you to get to know him. And that's the beauty of marriage, that in the relationship, it's really you're getting to know Jesus better through each other and what, you know, each other are able to reveal and share in terms of the life that he's given us. And, you know, the same thing can happen in a set of friends, you know, when you need comfort and a guy's able to speak that word in season that you need to hear. And, you know, that's ministry of the Spirit happening right there. And, but it's because he knows you, because he knows what your struggle, he's able to speak. Or again, if it's the other, if all of a sudden, you know, you're just, you need to be like slapped across the face, like David, you know, looking at Bathsheba, that too, you know, that's the ministry of the Spirit too. And so, you know, God can really powerfully use these relationships, but we've got to invest in them, because when we need them, they won't be there. And that's what happens to a lot of guys. They invest in their career. You know, they've got their hobbies. They don't invest in relationships. And then, you know, they hit midlife. They start having a few, you know, the water gets a little bit choppy, and they don't have anybody to support them, to help them. And, you know, all of a sudden they do something extreme. It's too bad, because if they would have had that set of guys that knew that they probably could have avoided some mistakes. So again, that's the warning for the you know, this week.
Thank you. You beat me to it. Now, my sisters sometimes tell me that I need to spend more time out there building relationships, but they mean it for another reason. But I make it a point to, you know, call my friends that I have in my close circle, and I make it a point to reach out to them at least once a week, every other week or something like that, just to see how they're doing, just to check up on them. And they may not have the same religious beliefs that I do, but I still make it a point to let them know that I'm there if they need me. Because look, I'm not bragging. I'm a well-known guy. I don't like to admit it, but it's true. So it would be kind of dumb of me not to keep those relationships going, because it's not about me. All right. Because if people can see Christ through me, then I want to continue to display Christ. So they want to say, okay, what does he have that I don't have? I could be the poorest person out of all my friends, but I got something that they need. And like my good friend Tim would always say, that's the Jesus I know. So I want to make sure that my friends and my family see the Jesus and they learn the Jesus that I know. And that's my whole goal, my whole purpose for this podcast. You know, it's that they would see the Jesus that I know. That's all I got for today. You got anything else you want to add since you beat me to the warning label?
Yeah, no, I just would really encourage guys pursue this. Don't think it'll happen on its own. And if you're a pastor and if you're involved with building men's ministry, make sure that this is an objective that you're seeking. You know, so often you either men's ministry falls into the, you know, it's just a Bible study, which is great. I mean, guys need to know the Word of God, but there's never the relationships that, again, allow guys to really open up about their lives. Or it's like, you know, let's go build bonfires and like do, you know, Young Life camp activities, which is a lot of fun. But again, it doesn't necessarily produce the relationships. And so, you know, you need to let guys be guys, but you also need to find ways to let guys ask good questions. Because there's a great guy, Joe Smith, who says, if you want better answers, ask better questions. And so, you know, if you have small groups or whatever else, make sure that there are good questions. Because if you ask good questions, you're going to find out more about the men you're around.
That is absolutely true. And if I could give one tip before we leave, if you are a guy that has that spiritual friendship with someone and they come to you with a problem, and this is something I learned from being a cop and a detective, shut up and listen. Okay. Be slow to speak. Because if you jump in and try to add your own words to something, you might mess it up even more. You might drive that person to the next level. So let them tell their story and you wait on God to give you the right words to say at the right time. Sometimes you may hear something and you may not even want to speak on it right then and there. And that may be the appropriate thing to do. But just shut up and listen and let God lead you on what to say. Again, we have to remember that when it comes to a chain link fence, it stays together by a link, and Christ is our link. All right. Mm. So again, that's all I have. Joe, thank you so much for another good week.
Yeah, man.
It's saddening because we're about to be over the hump and we're five more. There's a
I'm not it's the never ending. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not good at math. But yeah, guys, if you haven't gotten a copy of this book, it's not too late to jump into this Bible study. Get in there and let's do this together. And then maybe we'll come back and do Pilgrim's Progress together as a Bible study. Yeah. For me. I think that'll be good. So, all right. Well, thank you guys for watching and listening. And I look forward to seeing you next week. God bless.
You have reached the end of yet another episode from The Ear. We hope that God's word remains on the ears of the listeners. We pray that this podcast would urge you to go forth and spread His good news to the world. Thank you for tuning in. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. See you at the next episode. God bless you, and may His glory shine upon you.